ended up in Montreal initially, I believe. Got a job in just as a sort of a housekeeping job in one of the hospitals in Montreal. She never did, I don't think, finish high school when the war started. She had not quite finished. So she didn't have any training at all. And that's kind of where she learned her English. And it was kind of tough because it was English and French. She didn't know either, right, coming over. I'm not sure really why, but obviously there wasn't, maybe it was just because they were young. So I think she was there till she was 18. So she was there for a few years, learned her English, you know, kind of got her bearings with her girlfriends. And then there was a group of girls that decided they'd heard that Edmonton, Alberta was the land of opportunity at that point. So they just thought that they should come here. And I kind of remember asking her why, and it was more like she said, well, you know, we were always looking to make better for ourselves, but we were young too. We just thought it would be an adventure, you know. So part of it was just, let's do it. Came to Edmonton. Dad and a whole bunch of the Latvian boys had ended up in Edmonton as well. Mom and Dad just met on the street because they heard each other talking Latvian. And he was about 5 years, he was 5 years older than her. That's how they met, and just started, you just hung out with the people that spoke your language, you know, it was just easier, and got married. And the same thing with his best friend, John. He met his wife, Mirza, here in Edmonton, and again, they were all just sort of two quite separate groups, and then met, a lot of them paired up and ended up getting married in Edmonton. So when she was in Edmonton, she ended up, well, basically they got married and she wasn't working. So, seems to me, I don't know why he was in Edmonton at the time or for how long, but he was still with like the oil and gas industry. And he ended up, whatever he was doing, ended up being out of town a lot, and she just went with it. So they had to move. So they were in Fort St. John, and they were, I was in Red Deer, and they were in Olds. And Mom just moved with him. And so basically he was the breadwinner, and she was a housewife. And then they ended up coming back to Edmonton when I was about 4 or 5. And she worked in a greenhouse because I went to work with her every day, and she did some housekeeping. So I went with her all the time, whatever kind of job she had to take me. And then they moved to Stettler, Erskine and Stettler, where he started with, was British Petroleum then, or British, and then it became British American, and then Gulf. But he stayed with that company for 25 years. They ended up moving to Pinoca, and then he lived in Pinoca for 40 years. He talked to me about the war only about like a couple years before he passed away, because all his life he would never talk about it. They'd talk about their childhood, but they really didn't talk about. Mom used to tell me some stories because she was there when the war had started, and it was too dangerous to be in Riga because that's where her family lived. So they moved her out to live with her aunt and uncle on the farm, and partly to help them, but also to get her out of the city. She said it was terrible. She was just scared to death every day that somebody would come in and rape her, right? Like, because you just started hearing terrible stories, and there would be soldiers coming into the area every once in a while. She was just scared to death. You know, she would talk about a couple stories. She'd have to walk through the woods to get from her uncle's place to the store or something like that. And it was like she was ready to die every time that happened, right? And then it just got too bad. And she said she talked to her mom and dad, and they agreed that she should leave. There was an opportunity to... They paid some money. Her dad was not too badly well off, so they paid some money to somebody with a boat to get them across to Sweden, I think they went, where they picked up a, an ocean liner. Because out of Sweden, there were a lot of companies that were offering the opportunity to go and work. So I think all of them had to work for the first year or 2 years to pay off their fare over, and then after that they were free. So Canada and private industry was putting those sort of plans together to bring people over. And so they both ended up in that sort of situation. Dad ended up being captured by the Germans. And so they were, Dad, so when Germany came in, he was sort of already conscripted into the Latvian army. They got captured right away. So he was a prisoner of war very quickly, and ended up being sort of, Germany was sort of the friendly nation as opposed to the Russian. They were really, really afraid of the Russians. So they became sort of displaced people in a German, first of all, they were conscripted into the German army. When they were captured, he started fighting for the Germans. And that's why I think he never spoke about it, because, you know, for most of his life, they were looking for German war criminals, basically, and persecuting them, right? And I know he had a tattoo, because as soon as they were captured, all of the Latvian soldiers had a German tattoo put on, and he would never wear a sleeveless shirt all his life. And I don't know why it didn't get removed, but I guess there'd be a scar there, and then people would wonder where that came from. Or very, very, very paranoid about all of the past. And so he really didn't want anybody to know about where he was and what he had done and what happened. And I think in his mind, it was something you didn't want to remember anyway, and the less people knew, the better. So he just never talked about it. And I always thought maybe he'd killed somebody, but at the end, as it turned out, he actually said, he told me one day that he was very lucky because he could drive big trucks for some reason. He had a driver's license to drive a truck. They put him into driving the big transport trucks. So he had a gun, but he never had to use it. And yet I always thought he was so afraid because he'd killed people, right? That he'd actually been a soldier shooting. But no, he was just driving a truck. Still, so paranoid. But anyway, when the war was over, and of course they were in Germany with the German army, all of the Latvians, well, they didn't really want them there. There was no jobs, and it was tough times anyway. So they were kind of in a camp for displaced people. And again, somehow, there was companies from Canada that, after the war was over, made it known that they would have opportunities available for people that had been, they couldn't go back to Latvia. Basically, they were refugees in Germany. And Germany treated them really, really well, because they weren't Jewish. Well, you know, the ones that were conscripted obviously weren't Jewish. They were white. They fit the mold. So they were treated very well. And Dad never had anything bad to say about the Germans. Not any hard feelings at all. So whatever happened there, they obviously treated them well, except they just didn't want them to stay because they didn't have any place for them. And they offered a whole bunch of these soldiers an opportunity to come to Canada. They needed logging camps if they were interested. So a whole bunch of them, they were a group that decided to take that opportunity. So I don't know how many actually came over on that particular opportunity, but and then they went to Northern Ontario or something, and they had to log for 2 years. And then her younger brother and she had an older sister, a younger brother, and they all stayed, but she had the opportunity to leave on this, what they had found this plan, you know, where they paid for her passage and went with a bunch of girls. Years later, her mom and dad and brother came to Canada. And I don't know how they got out or why they got out at that time, but her sister never left. She stayed on, and she was a good, loyal communist subject, and got a good teaching job in a school, and she was well off, and she wrote very infrequently because she didn't want to be associated with the rest of her family, because she had basically let them go and was a communist. So we spent a whole afternoon together. And it was funny because when I called my, I got hold of my cousin to tell her we were in Latvia visiting, and we were there for a week. So I called her quite early and said, was there any chance of getting together and meeting my aunt? And they were really suspicious because they didn't really know me, and there'd been no communication between me and my cousins, only between Mom and her sister. And then Mom had passed away. She'd been gone for a few years already, so there was no communication anymore, right? They insisted on coming to our hotel. They wouldn't let us go to their place, and they were going to just come for coffee. So it was like, you haven't seen these. These are long-lost relatives. And very, very suspicious. You know, you could just see, it was like, oh, well, isn't that interesting? You're here. And I said, yeah. I didn't have any way of, I said, we really weren't sure what we were going to do, or how we were going to get together. So I thought we'd just get there and then see what the situation was and try and find everybody, right, rather than make plans ahead of time. So then they came to the hotel, and we had kind of coffee and tea and some wine with my aunt. And then they sort of checked us out, and everything was okay. And then it was like, then you were welcomed into the family. And the next day we had to go to their place then. And they put on a huge spread and invited all of their kids and my other cousins, and spent the whole day together and had a big party. So it was really interesting how it happened. It's just like, who's this relative out of the blue? They're very suspicious of everything. I think because of everything they lived through, anybody who you don't know is somebody that you need to watch out for. It's just, I guess they were just happy to be free of that like horrible fear that had come over, you know, something they had, you know, had for the previous years. So you're just in terror of what's going to happen, and all sorts of horrible things are happening around you. And it was just, it was very, I mean, so it was, the freedom was great, but it was very lonely because they didn't have the language. So I know both of them, especially Mom, said, it's just a terrible thing to have to go and live somewhere and you don't have the language. You just feel very isolated and lonely. And then she had no family, and, you know, it was a great idea at the time. And then you get here and it's, wow, she was homesick and missed her mom and dad. And so there was certainly no ties to where they landed. And, you know, she said the work was hard, what they did, and, you know, nobody really spoke to them because they didn't have the language. So you were just really a little worker bee with making very little money because they took most of your money. So all you had was room and board and maybe, you know, a couple dollars to spend, you know, to go to a movie. But that's it. So for that first little while both of them worked, you know, you were just surviving, but at least you didn't have to fear for your life, you know. So that was kind of the step up. They never traveled alone, which I think made them a little bit better off than anybody who ended up here alone. So they always stayed in groups. So they had friends. There were always this, you know, three or four or five kind of thing together. You know, the winters were really cold but there were jobs, you know, lots of jobs. So there was always, it was easy to get a job, and they stuck in their groups. So again, when you heard somebody else speaking your own language, you glommed on, just like you do if we go somewhere. You know, you go to Brazil and you hear somebody talking English, you're kind of, oh, you know, when you're kind of in the minority, you pick it, you hear it right away. If you're living there, you would have that immediate association. Oh, you know, we're from the same place. But especially Latvia, because it's such a small country. They just lived in an apartment, like lived in a suite in a house until they moved to Erskine. It was, I was going to school, I was six, but it was a shack. It was, we had no plumbing, so we had outhouse. we had running water, but that was it. We had no plumbing. And the Erskine is a tiny, tiny little town, but it was really close to the gas plant where he worked. But it had a school, and we were almost like on the outskirts of town. So there was a farm right beside us. So it was almost like we were on an acreage. And then when we moved to Stettler, that would have been the first house he owned. And it was a tiny little house, but it was in town, and it backed onto a railway track. And it's funny, because when you're little, it seemed like a big house to me, but we went back years later to see the house. And it's, and again, it's this tiny little shack sitting at the back of this lot, and it's like, that's where we lived? Oh my gosh, when you're little, you just have no concept of what your household first house is like, right? So my first language was Latin. I don't ever remember having difficulty with English, not at all. I was a grade A student from day one. In fact, they wanted me to skip grade one and go to grade two, because we were in Erskine, the school, grade one and grade two were in the same class, grade two and grade three, because it's small. So I started in grade one, but I was too smart for that. So half of the day they'd move you over into the grade twos because I just had to go across the aisle to do grade two work. And so I obviously never had any problem. I think my parents would have probably, Latvian was my first language, but I think they spent a lot of time, at that point their English was pretty good, and wanted me to learn English. They didn't want me to have trouble with the language. So they were quite adamant about me being fluent in English. And all our friends at that point, you know, Dad was working at the gas plant, so his English was quite good already. And the people that were in Erskine, there was no Latvians there, like the community that stayed together as friends all their lives, split up. We always stayed friends and saw each other, but they really all went their separate ways where the jobs took them, right? And so we were out of the Latvian community for sort of the rest of Mom and Dad's life, because we lived in small towns. And so the only thing we would do is we went to Edmonton a lot to visit Snepts. So they were like my aunt and uncle, because I had no other relatives here. We would go to some of the Imanta functions. They'd have bazaars, stuff like that. And so, but even as a kid, I don't remember doing that a lot. Mom and Dad used to go to the odd function, but it was mostly they kept in touch with their friends, not so much the Latvian community. Until I was quite a bit older, then we started doing a lot with them and bringing my kids to the functions and stuff like that. So it's kind of odd how it just went in waves as far as the whole community versus just individual friends, good friends, that's all. Well, they always spoke Latvian. So it wasn't until later years that they actually started speaking English to each other in the home. You know, when they talked to their friends, it would typically be in Latvian. And if you were wanting to say something that you didn't want anybody else to understand, then you talked in Latvian. So it was around, and my grandfather, so my mom's dad basically finished working and retired. He moved to Ponoka, bought his own little house, and lived there for a long time. And he and I always spoke Latvian, so his English was never all that great. He was able to get jobs. He was a janitor and in charge of janitorial work, and he never really did have to learn that good English. It was okay, but he wanted to talk to me in Latvian. Because he was there, that preserved a lot of the ability to speak Latvian, kind of kept the culture in our family. But we were with Latvians all the time. That was still... So he had two other fellas that... one was in Red Deer and the one was in Edmonton, and they had worked together on these logging camps. And so they remained good friends all their lives. And the three of them bought this lot up at Baptiste Lake and built a cabin there. So... I mean, it was a Latvian cabin, right? And all of the Latvian friends would be invited there, and you know, quite often you'd do ligua there and have, you know, big fires, and they'd be singing and drinking and playing cards until late in the night, and so we always went there for John's Day because it was John's name day as well, for the spring. And then that was the main thing that you celebrated anyway in June, and then everybody would go to the lake, and so those sorts of celebrations for sure, you know, that was very important. Independence Day, we usually went to Edmonton because there was some sort of fancy dinner or lunch or something like that, and then everybody from Edmonton, and we would go there. Not so much, there was quite a large contingent of Latvians in Red Deer initially, so that where Mrs. Salminas came from. So her and Mum were very good friends. And so we went to Red Deer a lot as well for visiting, not so much for celebrations, but they were kind of left out of Imanta, right, because they were just a little too far. So it's so hard to preserve a culture in your home, especially once the people start dying off, right, and the language starts to disappear. To go there and to hear Latvian everywhere, to hear little kids talking Latvian, you know, the radio stations, that everything's Latvian, it was the weirdest, most wonderful feeling. It really was hard to describe when your past actually really comes right in front of you and you go, wow, I felt so at home there. Like, it was just so neat. It really was. And then I went back again with my husband and my son because I wanted my son to meet the relatives too, and they'd never met my husband. So the second time we left him out at home, and the three of us went, and it was even better because then at least the relatives were very welcoming and couldn't believe we'd actually come back. It was more like they thought we'd never be back. But and by that time, my aunt had passed away. Really, with all of that generation passing away, I mean, the culture's gone. It's just gone. When you go there and you put on a spread, Canadians or North Americans don't do that. Our generation doesn't do that anymore, not the way they did, where you had a feast and you drank and you sang and you sang and sang and sang and sang, and everybody just sings. Nobody does that here. You don't get together and sing. Do you ever do that? But you know that none of us do that. And it's just the most wonderful thing when you're surrounded by that. It's just so great. Too bad we've lost that. You're absorbed into a different culture here. You are different. What's a value to me is understanding my roots, knowing it, feeling good about them, knowing where I came from, and you know, sort of always knowing your past, is it gives you more definition, right? So I think that's important. And even I notice with my kids, they're proud to have a Latvian heritage, and I think it was huge for them to go there and understand that half, because they didn't grow up with what I did. So I knew what part of it was like, but they didn't, because my generation doesn't celebrate the way my parents did. So when they went there and they saw what it's like still today, it just gave them everything changes in your perspective of where half of you came from and what that's all about. And they're very proud of that, and they think it's great. But what will happen with their kids, who knows? Like, you really are, I mean, they're Canadians. I'm Latvian. I am. And yet I'm Canadian. However, like right now, there's move afoot to be able to grant Latvian citizenship to all of those whose parents were Latvian. And I would apply for that. I would want that. So to me, that's still very much a part of who I am. For those people that have still very strong language in their home, or and who have made lots of trips back. So I know, you know, there's some Latvian families that they go every second year, they go back to see relatives. So if you've done that and you maintain the language in your home, It is. That is still very much part of who you are. But if you haven't done that, and the language is very, very secondary, then, you know, it's becoming a bigger and bigger gap. So I think certainly for my kids, that connection won't be there that I even have, and mine's pretty loose as it is, right? Compared, because we just, I mean, a lot of families, like my dad's friend, they went over even during the communist era to maintain that connection. Their connection was so strong. There was so much family back there. And I think, really the Latvian flag itself. My son, after he went, he's a tattoo guy. He got a tattoo on his abdomen of three stars. I didn't realize at the time when he showed it to me. He told me, it was funny because we were talking about it, and he said, "Well, Mom," he says, "you should be happy because all my tattoos stand for something. There's some meaning behind them, and they stand for something." And I said, "Well, what are the stars?" And the three stars are from the Latvian Freedom Monument, because I'm proud I'm a Latvian. That was the symbol